Thank you for standing by, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's webinar. We have with us Ms. Annie Zhu, Vice President, Business Development of Capital Link, organizer of the event. I must advise you that this webinar is being recorded today. We now pass the floor to Ms. Zhu. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you, and good morning to everyone. Welcome to Capital Link's Closed-End Funds and Global ETFs webinar series. My name is Annie Zhu, Vice President of Business Development at Capital Link. Today's webinar will be a discussion on the European equity stock picking remains key. Our featured presenters from DWS are Britta Weidenbach, Managing Director, and Sylvia Shekpek, Director and Portfolio Manager. This event is accessible through a live audio webcast and then as an audio archive through www.capitallinkwebinars.com. After the discussion, there will be a live Q&A session. Webinar participants can submit questions through the sidebar on the presentation page titled Submit a Question or email them to questions@capitallink.com. You can submit a question at any time during the live event. The discussions and opinions expressed by the presenters are not intended as legal or investment advice or advice of any kind as a matter of fact and are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Capital Link bears no responsibility for them. Furthermore, the discussion may contain forward-looking statements concerning future events. I want to thank you all again for participating, and now I will pass the floor to Britta.
Yeah, thank you very much, Annie, and welcome everybody. Thank you very much for joining today. I would very much like to present our views on European equities and the funds that we are running in European equities and Eastern European equities. And as we are stock pickers, so as the funds are really run bottom up, this should also be the main topic of the presentation. So I'd like to start on page 4, please. And page 4 actually shows you what we are expecting this year in terms of GDP. So definitely, we do face a GDP recession, not only in Europe, but really in the end, globally. Eurozone, this year, we are talking around minus 7.5%, UK minus 8% in GDP, and more than 6% for the US along our estimates. You can see on the right-hand side of, on the right-hand chart of slide 4, that Q2 supposedly is the weakest quarter, where we probably see around or more than 10% GDP growth year over year. So it should be the trough, and we would then expect a recovery into Q3 and Q4. Certainly the slope of the recovery, there's still little visibility on this, but we hope we get some more information on that with leading economic indicators over time. On the left-hand side, you can also see that when it comes to which industries are hit most by the current crisis, corona crisis, then there are huge divergences. So you can see that there is a big divergence in how different industries are hit by corona. You can, for example, see that IT or industries like food or online retail will certainly be much less hit or even might even profit from the corona crisis, while sectors like leisure goods, tourism, entertainment, transportation are really hit hard because this is where the economy really came to a standstill. So this always provides opportunities for stock picking also when you then come to a subsector and certainly single stock level. On page 5, you can see what is this time an unprecedented monetary and fiscal stimulus that we are experiencing, not only in Europe, but certainly also in other regions like the U.S. But what is really new this time, that everyone, central banks And this time also the states themselves really really reacted very quickly in giving the stimulus to the market. And the EU recovery fund that you've probably heard of, we are talking around 750 billion euros here, that is in discussion, not signed off yet, but high likelihood of being signed off latest by the end of this year. So, you know, this fiscal stimulus was really the missing ingredient so far in the Eurozone picture when it comes to support to the market. So also here, certainly the EU recovery fund will support, this is one of the main goals of it, will support, I'd call it green infrastructure, which means it's a positive for sectors like utilities and, for example, building materials, and will help certain sectors to recover at a faster pace than others. And also this then certainly comes into the picture when it's about stock picking. So we would always, when picking stocks, certainly consider if they have kind of a natural tailwind by what is happening in the market right now in terms of fiscal stimulus, or if there's rather a headwind to their operational development. So let's move on to page six then. Here you can see what I was talking about in the beginning, that really Q2 and especially April was, the trough in terms of PMI. You can see that this is the manufacturing PMIs. You can see that especially in France, Italy, but also Germany, we saw a very low PMIs at around the 30 level. But since then, so May already recovered, and we had June PMIs yesterday. So in the Eurozone, we are now at 46.9. It does show that a recovery is going on. It is still not as visible if in the end, really, we can talk about a V-shaped recovery, or if this is rather, you know, the first turn up, but in the end might then go a little sideways. So this remains to be seen, but at least we can say for now we've seen the trough. So on page seven, because, you know, earnings growth and earnings revisions certainly are very important when judging on equity markets in general, but also when judging on the European equity market. And you can see that for quite a while, consensus estimates for Europe have not really reflected what we probably expect or should expect in terms of negative earnings growth for 2020. But right now, this chart has been done by the beginning of June. Right now, earnings expectations are at around minus 25%, even a little less year over year for European earnings. So a lot has already happened when it comes to negative earnings revisions. And generally, one could say that a fading of negative earnings revisions should be supportive also for European equity markets. But again, the big question mark certainly remains about the shape of the recovery. Is it V-shaped? Is it U-shaped? And then what does this mean for earnings levels into 2021? Because this is really what the market will focus on when it comes to valuations, to make a judgment on is the market fairly valued or is the market attractively valued or overvalued. So with that, maybe a few more words to valuation, which from my experience, and you know, I'm running European equities now for 21 years, this is certainly not the main driver of performance, but it's always supportive to know where we stand. But certainly, you know, when you look at current valuations, especially after the recent recent run in equity markets, we are at very elevated levels. So we are rather at a 10-year high. So this is not unusual when we are talking about earnings trough levels. So this is what we usually see. But certainly from now on or from here on, it does need a real recovery to come through near term to support the market in terms of valuation. We are all hoping to get some more insights on what is happening and some more insights on guidance on the operational development of European companies with the upcoming Q2 results season, which will actually start by the beginning of July. So another question that certainly everyone asks is, should we rather invest in growth or defensive? Should we rather invest in value, in cyclicals? I mean, I'd always be a little bit careful in saying cyclicals is equals value. But what you can see on this chart is certainly that with the recent run in equity markets, and you know we have seen kind of a value rally recently and a cyclicals rally recently, with, you know, earnings revisions at the same time for the cyclicals still having been negative, they definitely have overshoot it for now in terms of relative valuation to defenses. Nevertheless, if they are really able to recoup what they lost in terms of earnings in Q2 during the corona crisis, then maybe, you know, some of the cyclicals might even have some more upside. Others, by the way, others at the same time might already price in a V-shaped recovery. And again, this is where our stock picking comes into play. And we really rather prefer to continue to focus on structural growth, but address a barbell strategy with selective value opportunities that we consider not only attractive in terms of valuation, but also in terms of upcoming operational development over the medium to long term. So again, stock picking remains key. Let me just finish on the valuation part, page 10, by telling you that certainly European equities in its own history right now, as we are talking trough earnings, do not really look attractive. Nevertheless, if you compare to US equities, then definitely there is a discount. It's higher than what we've seen in the past. So relative to other equity markets, European equities do screen attractively. Let me turn to page 11, because that has been a topic for European equities. You probably heard a lot about dividend cuts in Europe. Certainly, this was mainly in the banking sector, because here some of the banks were forced for regulatory reasons to cut their dividends to make sure they have enough, they are well enough capitalized. And then on the industrial side, certainly a sector that has been hit more than others. Also here, companies wanted to make sure that they would be able to tap on any kind of government support, and governments, especially, you know, the German and the French governments, really ask companies to be careful on the dividend front if they really want to step into government help at some stage. So this is why some of the companies prudently just cut their dividends back a little bit to make sure they are, in case of an emergency, still able to tap government help. But overall, certainly, this does not change our approach And, you know, it's not that a company that cuts dividends just to make sure that they could be helped in case it's needed, that this is, you know, not a well-run company. So you really have to differentiate here between the ones that were forced to cut dividends and the other ones that did it for prudency. And as we have always been very much focused on the quality of the companies we invest in and a strong balance sheet, really this doesn't change our approach and also doesn't change the rank of companies that we would consider as investments in our fund. So just to give you a good example on page 12, what kind of difference it can make if you pick the right or wrong stocks, and certainly all the stocks then really belong to certain sectors or subsectors. And you can nicely see that, in terms of Eurozone earnings, just here as an example, it made a big difference if you were over the last years invested in globally exposed sectors in the Eurozone or domestic sectors. So the globally exposed sectors, which you can see here on the upper chart here, have certainly done much better in terms of their EPS development, for example, consumer discretionary stocks, than some domestic sectors like telecom. So really, you know, there's huge discrepancies here, and this is then not only on a subsector level, but it's certainly also on a single stock level. So just to give you an example, consumer staples this year, if you picked ABI, then the stock would have been down 40% year to date. If you picked Heineken within the same sector, the stock would only be down 11%. So it makes a huge difference. And, you know, if you invest in the right sectors, in the right stocks, really, in the Eurozone, then really in terms of EPS development, it's comparable, nicely comparable to what you see in the U.S. So therefore, performance should also be very well supported to what you can see with the respective U.S. equities. So with that, let me summarize our view on European equities. Again, really, it's about stock picking. There are huge discrepancies in the market. I hope I could shed some light on that. Overall, certainly, coronavirus and, we just see it again today, the trade war discussions, which come up again one or the other day. Really, those two topics will remain the concerns of the market participants over the next month, and will probably continue to cause volatility. What is still in the cards is if we are about to see a V-shaped or a U-shaped recovery. And as we have been talking about stock picking here, it might not all only be about, and this is also what we're focusing on, it might not only be about will the economy as such do V or U-shaped, but which sectors, which stocks will do V and which ones will do U-shaped recovery. And this is where stock picking comes into play. I mentioned the EU Recovery Fund, certainly a missing ingredient so far when it comes to the fiscal side of stimulus in the Eurozone. Definitely helpful, also helpful in terms of lower risk perception of especially the peripheral countries, and you've seen the spread tightening on back of this. So we do think there are still opportunities in the European equity market. We will continue to focus on structural growth companies with solid balance sheets and attractive cash flows. And we do think that volatility will remain elevated, but nevertheless, this will give us opportunities to stock pick for the medium to longer term. So with that, let me please give you just a little insight of how we work and how we are positioned on our platform in terms of team strength. And I have to ask you to please turn to page number 26. So on page number 26, you can see the European Equities team running the European Equity Funds that we are presenting to you, and also the Eastern European Equity Funds that we are about to present to you. And really, you know, with 29 portfolio managers and analysts in this European Equities team, with an average investment experience of 16 years, we do have among the strongest EU equity teams in the industry. And again, it's not only the number of analysts and portfolio managers, but also the long-standing experience, investment experience that we have amongst them. We do have a dedicated global research platform where all the analysts on the platform need to display their recommendations very clearly. It's an online tool where you can see any minute what kind of changes have been made and for what reasons. So we have more than 50 analysts covering over 500 stocks globally. In Europe, we have a coverage of at least 250 stocks. And certainly, when it comes to company meetings, when it comes to idea generation and analysis, being very close to the corporates is really key for us. So we do have, in the end, about 1,500 company meetings, company contacts, at least throughout the year. So this is really what makes the strength of our stock picking that then provides the ideas and recommendations for the funds. In the end, certainly every fund manager has to take his or her own decision on which stocks to pick, because really the fund manager, him or herself, in the end is responsible for the performance of the fund, but it is well embedded into this strong global research platform. And with that, you can see on page 29 that it also panned out in a good performance versus the benchmark for the European Equity Fund, which is investing in European equities with a focus on large cap equities. So you can see here that year-to-date, by now, the fund outperformed its benchmark, the MSCI Europe, by 4.79%. And it's not only a short-term phenomenon. It's really that over the long term, also, you do see this strong stock-picking performance of the fund really being nicely ahead of benchmark throughout all the different time periods on page 30. Also, I would like to add to this the performance of the New Germany Fund on page 33. So the New Germany Fund really is a small mid-cap fund for German equities only, also very focused fully on stock picking. We do have a dedicated small mid-cap team on our platform. So this is really helpful and a strong platform we have here. And also here you can see that it worked very nicely in terms of generating alpha. In this fund, year-to-date, we have an outperformance of 8.6% on page 33. You can see it. And on page 34, you can see that over the longer term, really a consistent, strong performance in this fund. So with that, I'd like to conclude and hand over to Sylvia Čepek on the Eastern European Equity Fund. Sylvia.
Yes, thank you very much, Britta. Good morning. I would like to start my part of the presentation with page 15, So please turn the presentation to page 15. The first, this page is talking mainly, or the first pages of the presentation are relating to Russia. Russia is the biggest country in our region, or in my my investment universe, and in our fund. On page 15, you can see a macro update on Russia and a short description of the impact of the declining oil price for the country. That was in last 3 months the main issue, reason about Russia, the decline in the oil price and the impact on the macroeconomy. As we can see from the charts, oil price decline is having a direct and strong impact on the economy, mainly through the decline of export and fiscal revenues. And as we can see on the left-hand chart, oil and gas revenues accounted for approximately 41% of overall budget revenues in 2019, which is approximately 7.5% of GDP. So a lot comes from oil and gas revenues. If we look at the external balance account on exports, gas revenues, oil and gas revenues accounted for over 57% of total export revenues, which means 40% of GDP. So it's not surprising that Russian economy is connected, correlated to oil price. And as we can see on the right hand chart, we see the, if you look back, we see chart about approximately three recessions in Russia, which were triggered mainly by a declining oil price. Now, please turn to page 16. To continue about oil price and impact on the macroeconomy, we see that oil price, declining oil price is correlated to declining currency, to declining ruble. Central Bank of Russia let the exchange rate weakening in line with the oil price. But good news on this chart is in last one and a half months, things moved in a positive direction. So oil price recovered very strongly. Brent price have recovered strongly from a low approximately of $19 in April to over 40 now. However, it's still behind beginning of year highs of $60. The same, almost the same happened to ruble. Ruble hovers around 70 now from the levels above 80 in March. So this applies as well to the equity market as well. So the correlation is there. We see markets recovering as probably globally as well. So Russian market reached its low in March, equity market, and then recovered almost over, I think, over 50% in the last 2 months. Continuing with some macro pictures, which I think are very important to understand the country and the equity market as well. We can see from page 17, Russia entered the crisis from a very strong position. There is a national wealth fund, and the liquid part of the national wealth fund, the Russian national wealth fund, exceeds 7% of GDP. And this, of course, is a caution and could help offset lower oil prices. On the hand of fixed reserves, it's a worry of many investors. We see how big the reserves are now. They are approximately $750 billion and cover 23 months worth of imports. So on this, Russia is on pretty safe side. This, of course, enabled government react pretty quickly and pretty flexible on the crisis, both oil crisis and corona crisis. On page 18, another voice of investor is how high is the debt, foreign debt of emerging markets economies. So we see Russia has significantly reduced foreign debt in recent years. And if you look deeply into companies on a bottom-up base, we see that net debt to equity went down from 40% in 2015 to over 20, slightly over 20 now. So it means these companies are less dependent to financial markets, less dependent to have sources of financing. On page 19, I wanted to show you a little bit how the market, the equity market, is structured. So as we talked already, a lot about oil price, and we see why now we are talking about oil price. On the on the right side of the of page 19, we see composition of MSC Russia, and energy is a big part of this. Energy is over 50% of the index. And that makes, of course, this market correlated to the oil price. However, what is very important as well, and then we can go already to page 20, that the companies, especially energy companies, are a very good position, and they have a very good balance sheet, solid balance sheet. And even with $20 oil price, they're generating free cash flow yields. The big investment story in Russia is dividend, which is almost the highest, I think the highest globally. And despite of corona crisis and oil price weakening, majority of oil price companies in Russia are committed to paying dividends. We see here on page 20 different scenarios dependent on the oil price. One exception are banks, as Britt already mentioned in her presentations. Banks are a bit more difficult case because the regulator recommended the banks to withhold distribution of 2019 profits to shareholders. It means the biggest committed commitment to a dividend space comes from oil and gas companies, financials, we don't know. But still, we have very high dividend yields, which makes investments in Russian equities quite attractive. On the page, please turn to page 21. I have prepared slides 21 and 22, two slides about Eastern European markets, the smaller one. So Poland, Czech Republic, and Hungary. On page 21, we see how open these economies are. And on CE countries, Hungary and Czech look, and when you look at this chart, most exposed to external demand shocks. Poland is farther down, so it means has more closed structure of the economy. In this context, I would mention as well this EU recovery fund, which will probably support the economies of EU members like Hungary, Czech Republic, and Poland if it will be approved. On slide 22, on page 22, we see how declining oil price impacts inflation. And inflation in Hungary and Romania appears to be most sensitive to the oil prices. Of course, all of the Central European countries are likely to be affected or are affected by the European recession and domestic lockdown. We talk about stock picking and bottom up. The majority of the stocks, or plenty of stocks, are in these countries in financial sector, which were a bit skeptical because of low interest rates and increased in provisioning. On the page, I have here now on page 24 as a more summary as well of the outlook. So as I already mentioned, oil price dependent, but Russian companies are in very healthy shape, paying dividends. What is important, the ruble devaluation helps the exporters because they have dollar revenues and ruble costs. And what is actually now even more important, stock picking, of course, was always important. For us, we used a combination of top-down and bottom-up. But nowadays, we think that choosing the right sectors is even more important than country allocation. On a country, on sector allocation, we prefer defensive sectors such as telecommunication services, gold, and food retailers. On the fund itself, which I wanted to present you as well, we can turn to page 37. We have here our positioning. So in sector-wise, compared to benchmark, it's as of March 2020. So as I already mentioned, we are overweight in defensive sectors like communication, consumer staples, and underweight in financials. As Britta already mentioned, it makes a lot of difference in which sector you are positioned yourself. So communication is a sector where we have a healthy dividend, healthy business case, and we profit from digitalization. The same about consumer staples, profiting from lockdowns and as well partially from digitalization. On financials, our underweight is mainly due to outlook on the interest rates and provisioning of the banks. On the country allocation as of March 2020, we are more positive on Russia and less positive on CEE countries. Thank you very much. I think that's it from my side.
Thank you, Sylvia. So I would then open up for questions if there are any. Not too many questions on the webpage. Maybe if right now there are no questions, then let me add to the positioning of the European Equity Fund. And I would ask you to turn to page 35 so that you can see how European Equity Fund is positioned. Again, this positioning really is in the end a result from the stock picking that we do. It's not about deciding for a sector first and then pick the stocks within the sector. It's really a result of the bottom-up stock picking. But definitely when it comes to judging on operational development, then it does make a difference in which sector a stock is positioned. So if there are any tailwinds, natural tail or headwinds. So you can see that industrials, the fund is overweight. Why overweight here? I think you have to keep in mind that really the industrial sector in Europe is very, in general, but in Europe also is very diverse. So we are not only talking highly cyclical companies here. We are at the same time also talking about a lot of structurally growing companies that in the first place dependent on the economic cycle. So this, I think, is important to keep in mind. On the IT front, we do have an overweight selected stocks here. Again, some with a more cyclical background, others with really more of a structural growth background. Financials, I think, is important to mention. It's an overweight, but it's really an overweight because of insurance companies that we picked into market weakness and which contributed nicely to performance this year. And it's rather about exchanges and not really about banks. So financials overweight doesn't mean banks overweight. Banks are actually still underweight. We do have neutral positions in healthcare and materials. Healthcare, again, very diverse sector. We are not only talking about the big pharma names here, but also a lot of medtech names. Some of those are related to consumers, others aren't. So here, again, it's about stock picking. It's about asking how the situation right now will pan out also for the respective different companies. So will they potentially see V-shaped, U-shaped, or have they anyways held up very well because of the demand for medicine or special equipment during the depth of the corona crisis. We continue to be underweight in communication services, which actually is mainly because of telecoms and also about agencies. So structural issues here, we don't see a reason why to be positioned. It would rather be online names that we'd own here at all. We continue to be underweight in energy. I think in this case, and it might be different to what Silvia elaborated on before. In this case, I think energy is really simply a proxy of the oil price. So you do have to believe in a V-shaped recovery to be optimistic on energy stocks. They really had to cut back sharply on their dividends. And, you know, with the lower oil price level, they will probably have to cut back on CapEx, which then again means lower growth going forward. So we really do see structural issues on the European energy front, which is different to Eastern European energy stocks. And consumers continue to be underweight, which is mainly a reflection of not owning any automobile stocks at this stage. So this would it be from my side to add to the positioning. Are there any questions by now? I can't see any other questions. Then with that, let me maybe quickly turn to page 36. So here you can really see the top five holdings compared to the index. And again, it's really a stock picking fund. It's highly concentrated, meaning that if we pick a stock, we do want to have a clear positioning also against benchmark. We are not benchmark driven, just benchmark aware. So stocks can certainly be chosen outside of the index. And you can see here that really on the top five relative holdings, in terms of overweight, you see it's at least 2.5% overweighted. On the underweight, it's also at least 1.5% underweighted to make sure we do have a clear statement here about the stocks that we like or don't like to own. Sometimes, because you can see it here as a good example, sometimes we might not be negative on a stock like Roche, for example, but we then prefer other stocks in the pharma universe and would then, you know, outweigh the underweight we have in Roche. And therefore, still create alpha, even if Roche were to perform. So that's how we approach the stock picking. And as I mentioned before, it really resulted in nice relative outperformance over different time frames. Are there any questions by now? Okay, so I get the question here on real estate. What is the perspective on real estate? Well, you know, real estate does not play a huge role really in the pan-European indices. So if you look at the pan-European indices, then real estate stands for roughly 2%, not more than that. Right now, we are rather more cautious, certainly on, you know, the real estate companies that are tilted towards retail and office space. We could consider investments into more of the residential space, but for now, we feel there are better opportunities in other, let's say, more defensive sectors. So at current stage, we definitely, from a sector perspective, continue to prefer utilities to the real estate sector in Europe, as you know, real estate on the residential front has done quite well, but there are certainly, you know, regulatory issues that could arise. That could rather be an obstacle, especially here in Germany. while for the utility sector, as I mentioned before, it should rather be tailwinds for example, the EU recovery fund or the general goal to be more carbon neutral within the next year. So that's our current stance on real estate. Again, it's not a huge sector weight, and we prefer in that, you know, defensive space rather utilities than real estate. Are there any other questions? Any other questions maybe to the Eastern European Equity Fund? Okay, if that's not the case, and I would like to conclude. Thank you very much for your attendance. Thank you very much for taking the time, and have a nice day. Bye.
Let us conclude our webinar for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.